Well, combining foreign equity with local expertise, it's often a successful approach, according to Gina Lennox. Her PhD research was into what's known as absentee farmers. That's a category that includes foreign investors. Her work focused on the Cowra and Bland districts of New South Wales, and we spoke earlier, and first she explained to me, in more detail, the idea of an absentee owner.
Most of the literature talk about a non-resident landowner. So that could be the farmer who lives in town and travels to their property, every day. Or it could be a person who's a resident on one property and absentee owns other property, either non-adjoining property, either in the district or, you know, in another district. Mm-hmm. And it can range up to, you know, the corporations whose headquarters are either in the local town, a metropolitan area, or overseas.
It's quite a different thing, though, isn't it? A locally based operator who might live in town and travel out to the farm versus someone in Collins Street or Pitt Street or Shanghai.
Yes, and I think there are important distinctions to make there. I talk about degrees of absentee ownership. You know, I think the farmer that travels to their property each day is as close to resident owner as you can get, and the investor that invests in an investment company who then owns the land is as far away from the land as you can get. So I think there's a continuum.
Historically, though, there's this belief, I guess, in Australia that a farmer historically has been the family living on the homestead in the paddock. Has that actually been the case in Australian history, white history?
Well, I can only speak for the Lachlan Valley, where I did a statistical analysis and qualitative analysis of this premise, and I found quite the opposite. I found that basically in 1849, 49% of all lessees were absentee and 6% were resident on one lease and absent on another, and they absentee occupied 71% of the Lachlan catchment, or the Lachlan squatting district as it was known then.
Okay.
And then the 1850s gold rush and, you know, wool price increases and that in the 1850s got people wanting to get access to land. So the government introduced laws in 1861 favouring residents. It was conditional selection based on, you know, you taking up residency. Mm-hmm. The problem is they put the price of the land far too high and they also subdivided the blocks far too small. And basically by 1885 you had majority of landowners in the areas I looked at were resident, but still 60-70% of the land was still absentee owned. So the big, large absentee landowners remained. And the situation got worse after 1885 because you had so many droughts and recessions and then the depression. So by 1935, you had, you know, a lot of corporations, you know, like maybe owning a quarter of the area of the land. So basically, I found that absentee owners actually owned the most land right up until after 1935.
Okay, and what happened then?
Well, then you had World War II, Britain taking all the commodities they could get, you know, with meat and other foodstuffs. You had the halcyon days of the 1950s and 60s where you had good rainfall, good terms of trade, and you had your soldier settlement schemes that had learnt somewhat from the First World War schemes and were trying to, you know, create viable farms. And basically those two decades of good times plus 110 years of landlords favouring residency meant by 1970 resident owners actually own more land than absentee owners.
So that was the peak of resident ownership.
Yeah. And then, of course, you've got deregulation starting. In the 1970s, you had international financial deregulation, mm-hmm. huge inflation and that, and you had British investors mass exiting. So all the corporates, you know, the Scottish Australian Company, the Australian Mercantile Land and Finance Company, Australian Estates, all those, you know, long-term players in Australian pastoralism basically sold up and exited Australian agriculture by 1985. And then you had the agricultural deregulation in Australia coming in the 1990s and coupled with worsening terms of trade, and then, you know, on top of that, the worst drought they've ever experienced, these poor farmers, you know, 10 years of drought. And between 1990 and 2009, you have this massive escalation of absentee ownership. Mm-hmm. And basically, it takes it back up to 1849 levels.
And this trend is why we see so much public interest, I guess, in who owns land now, agricultural land now.
Yeah, yeah. But I would say that corporate agriculture, if you look at it historically, is a cyclic affair. You've got some players that stay in for 140 years, like the Australian, Scottish Australian Company, or, for instance, Australian Agricultural Company that was established in 1824 and still going. And then you've got your, you know, Kidmans and Litchfields and, you know, your big family corporations that are still going. But you've also got cycles of corporate investment, so that, you know, in the 1960s, when things were going very well, you had a lot of corporates coming into purchasing land for pastoralism and cropping. And by 1985, they'd left. You know, I'm talking British Tobacco, BP Superannuation Fund and a few others in the Lachlan. So, you know, corporates tend to have 10-year investment horizons, and if their investors are not getting the return they expect, then they may look for other pastures, especially if the stock market settles down or, you know, other investments look attractive.
My guest on Bush Telegraph is Gina Lennox, who's done a PhD on absentee ownership of rural land. Gina, that 10-year investment horizon, it leads to questions about the implications of absentee ownership. Can we go through a couple of the issues that get raised when this topic is brought up? Does absentee ownership typically mean less people in the area, or a dwindling of population for rural towns?
I didn't find that, but then it wasn't based on a huge survey. I studied 28 absentee owners in the qualitative sense, and I found that in 68% of cases, there was no reduction of the number of residents on the original area of land. Now, this could be because resident farm managers and their families and their farm labour, you know, absentee owners tend to employ resident farm labour. The other thing is they'll rent out a house that's inhabitable and not lived in. Mm-hmm. Then for lifestyle properties, what you tend to find is that a larger property has been subdivided, so there's an increase in both resident and absentee owners on that original area of land.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to look elsewhere for depopulating the bush.
So clearly, if a big institution, foreign or otherwise, buys a property, someone's still got to manage the land.
That's right. And some of them employ more than others.
But what about the implications then for the local economy? Because the temptation is to think an owner-occupier will spend that money locally and the cash will circulate around a town, whereas an absentee owner might take their profits and spend them elsewhere.
Well, it depends on whether they're local or non-local. I found there was quite a few local absentee owners. So you've got, in the Blanshire, there were 14% of all landowners basically lived in a local town, and they could be farmers and doctors and lawyers and real estate agents and council people and, you know, agribusinesses and family corporations of all sorts.
So they will still spend locally. But what about your Pitt Street, Collins Street farmers or your international foreign investors?
Well, basically, unless you've got a local agribusiness that is set up by local people and, you know, might have a few branches locally, nearly every agribusiness is, you know, sort of takes their profits out of the area anyway. So even if you buy locally, the profits of that landmark or whatever don't stay in the area. So the local outlet is a mere distributor for a larger concern. I would suggest that, you know, in terms of schools and other sort of community services, of course, people who live locally, you know, support the community more. But I also found that a lot of these investment companies and multinationals, they like to employ the ex-landowner as the farm manager. So they're still intimately connected with the community.
So just because there is a higher level of foreign investment or absentee ownership in an area, it doesn't dilute or diminish that feeling of community involvement?
I'm not saying that. I think what happened historically, the British companies were seen as great places to work. You know, people aspired to be jackaroos and then, you know, work themselves up in the Scottish Australian and, you know, Australian estates and those places. Then we had this period of resident ownership and so on. And then we've had this sort of incredible pressure on farmers through deregulation and drought. And I think the new players, not only are they coming after a lot of people owned and lived on their own farm, but they're also coming from different backgrounds, so that you've got, instead of in the Lachlan, of all the foreign corporate investors, they used to be all British from 19... 19- 88, that's changed. So now there's 50% Asian and 35% North American, then only 20% British.
And why does that matter? Is it?
Well, I suppose people fear that there'll be cultural misunderstandings. Now, that may or may not be the case. I actually identified it was very important for these multinationals or foreign corporates to have good communication protocols in place so that to maximise consultation, feedback and decision timeliness, and that it didn't bode well if there was dictatorship from the top. So it's about having company policies in place that allow people to take ownership of the land, you know, the farm manager and the farm workers to feel responsible for what they're doing rather than just to be lackeys of some foreign, you know, body that doesn't understand the local conditions.
That's Gina Lennox, PhD candidate at Charles Sturt University, with some timely research given the amount of activity from foreign investors in Australian farming at the moment. This is Bush Telly on RN.